Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Last Saturday night, the Virginia General Assembly finished its regular budget session without passing the state's two-year budget. So the General Assembly is again headed into overtime. Sometime before June 30, when the state runs out of money and runs out of a budget, the legislature is likely to pass a budget. It did pass about 1,600 other bills and dealt with some other significant and highly charged social legislation. Joining us for this discussion of Virginia's General Assembly session are a pair of veteran reporters who spent most of the last 64 days covering the Assembly's actions and inactions. Shellyann Davis, who writes for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, and Anita Kumar, who writes for the Washington Post. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you on the program. Joining us by phone from a levee somewhere in Mississippi is Bob Lewis, who covers state government and politics for the Associated Press. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Bob. Actually, I'm in Louisiana. We're down here on my vacation with an outstanding young crop of journalism students from my alma mater, Ole Miss. They're documenting the damage from last year's flood and the danger that the Mississippi poses to people all up and down the river, from New Orleans to Minnesota.
Worthy project.
Happy to be a part of this.
Well, pleasure having you back on the program. I'm your host, Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. Please give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. If you have a question for our reporter panel of Shellyann Davis, Anita Kumar, and Bob Lewis. Bob, since you can't be with us for the entire hour, I know you have to go off and get some cheesy grits or something. It is a primary day down there, not in Louisiana, just the two neighboring states. Let me begin with you with a question. When do you anticipate that the oldest continuous democratically elected legislature in the Western world will finally reach agreement and pass a budget?
I really don't know, Bob. I believe they will get a budget done. They'll get it done before the June 30th drop-dead date. As you recall, in 2006, we didn't finalize a budget until 48 hours were left on the old one. So we got dangerously close there. I think that linchpin to all of this is Senator Chuck Colgan. Chuck gave a speech on the floor the other day that I believe made a difference. Chuck rebuked both sides for the hostility, the inflamed rhetoric that we've seen in the Senate since the fight over partisan control. And he turned to his own party and said, look, you're not going to get everything you want. And in interviews he's done since, he says, look, we're going to try to get as much as we can. But when we have to cut a deal, I'm going to do it. And Chuck is important because it only takes 21 votes. The Republicans, there are 20 Republicans, and they haven't been able to break a Democrat over to their side yet. Lieutenant Governor Bowling can't break the tie. The Constitution clearly says that he has no vote on appropriations bills. So that leaves just one Democrat they have to win over. And right now that seems to be Chuck Colgan. And Senator Colgan is going to, I think, do what he believes is the best he can for his party. And after that, I think they're going to cut a deal and get out of there. At least they'll get some version of the budget through the Senate. Then it goes into conference, and another dynamic takes hold. Instead of a partisan Democrat versus Republican dynamic in the Senate, then you've got a situation where the House has its budget and its priorities, and the Senate has different priorities, and they negotiate some sort of a reasonable middle ground between those two.
Assuming they can find a reasonable middle ground.
Quickly, sometimes not.
Do you think, what are the Democrats holding out for with this 20-vote block that is blocking an agreement on the budget in the Senate?
Well, we know for a fact that they're holding out for some change in party power sharing. Now, what that winds up being, if anything at all, maybe making Senator Colgan a co-chairman of finance, maybe evening up the representation on some other committees. I don't know. They have some budget items they want in there, too. They don't like the they don't like the tax plan that the governor put in there for transportation. They want more money for education. They don't like the tax credits for public schools, and how much of that they can negotiate in the budget is debatable. But they have a big grab bag of things. I think at its heart, the Democrats feel like, look, we got 20, you got 20. We're not going to be treated as inferiors. We're going to have to save face somehow. We're going to insist on being treated in some ways as equals. We know you've got the tiebreaker, but you have to respect us.
Before I let you go,
then I think we'll get a deal.
You know, it could be a month, it could be a week, it could be 2 months. Before I let you go, let me ask what this session is likely to be remembered for.
Oh, well, it depends on how long the budget impasse lasts. I mean, if state government has to shut down, then I think that's it. But right now, it's pretty clear that the social legislation, particularly the ultrasound abortion bill that provoked these noisy protests on Capitol Square that got us ridiculed in popular culture by Jon Stewart and Saturday Night Live. I mean, that's clearly what the epitaph of the 2012 session is going to be, I think, unless we don't get a budget passed.
And you think
we
will,
so. Problems.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much for joining us from
Louisiana. There's some crawfish etouffee with my name on it, and I'm going to go get it.
Beautiful. Well, thanks again. Shelian, let's look at, I think there are office pools across the country for people picking their field of 64 NCAA tournament. Are there any office pools in Richmond yet on when we're going to have a budget?
You know, we usually run a sine die pool amongst the press corps for the end of session. I think Anita was one of the only two people to actually bet on these people. Oh, three? Well, she raised her hand. My bet is probably sometime in the next several weeks, April-ish, sometime. I think they're supposed to come back next week and move the actual bill forward and get it in the conference. And then I think negotiators will keep working. But, you know, they've already done some talking about the budget and a lot of the items in the budget between the House and Senate. And so I think that it's mostly a question of at what point do Democrats give in? And I think that's probably more April than it is June.
It's already getting warm down here. Anita, what time frame are you looking at for the General Assembly, and what have you heard? I mean, do you think it's more likely to be 2 weeks or more likely to be 2 months?
I think it's more likely to be weeks. I'm hearing the last week of March or maybe the first week of April, right before Easter, they'd like to be done. I think the Democrats feel like they've sort of made a point by now. I mean, they're still hoping to get some other things in the budget, maybe some power issues, as Bob mentioned, but I think their point was made. I feel like a lot of around the state, they got a lot of bad publicity from what happened, and so I think they're ready to kind of cut a deal.
The social legislation that Bob Lewis was talking about a moment ago included a bill called House Bill 1 that actually passed the House of Delegates by 30-some votes and then was dispatched with six Republicans turning to vote with the Democrats to kill it in the Senate. This was the personhood bill. What would that bill have done, and why was it such a big deal in Richmond this year? I thought voters in Mississippi, who were looking at in the primary this week, had dispatched it some months ago in Mississippi.
Well, the supporters in Richmond say, or in Virginia say, it was really different than the Mississippi bill or the Mississippi referendum. It would have given rights to a fertilized egg. But basically, the supporter or the patron, the sponsor, Bob Marshall of Prince William, a Republican from Prince William who's running for U.S. Senate, says that the purpose was really to allow parents of the, you know, a mother, an expectant mother, to be able to sue if there was an accident or something and she lost the fetus. But people said it went way more, you know, it was much broader than that.
Who testified in favor of it and who testified against it?
Mostly the usual crowd, you know, Planned Parenthood was opposed, NARAL, Pro-Choice Virginia opposed, the Family Foundation, which is a conservative group here in Richmond, was for it. There were some other life groups, you know, pro-life groups that were for it. And it was on its way. It was actually on the Senate floor when it died by some moderate Republicans who didn't want that to happen.
It had passed through the Senate committee already and was on the floor of the Senate when it was sent back to committee for dispatch. The Senate and the House, as Bob Lewis noted, passed a watered-down version of the ultrasound bill after it was amended to make transvaginal ultrasounds voluntary instead of mandatory in the first trimester, but still makes transabdominal ultrasounds mandatory. What kind of reaction did that bill have inside the Capitol and outside?
I think both of the bills you just mentioned, personhood and ultrasound, really resulted in some of the publicity Bob was talking about. That's what, you know, got Virginia on Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show and led to, I think I've lost count, 4 or 5 protests, a couple of them pretty large, one resulting in some arrests. But it really, I mean, that some of those bills, I think personhood's been introduced before. The ultrasound bill has been introduced before. But they sort of took on a life of their own this session and got national publicity and really showed the partisan nature of this session.
What do you think this session will be remembered for? I mean, was it more partisan than normal?
I think it was more partisan than normal, even though both chambers are controlled by the same party, Republicans. I think it was more partisan, mostly because of what happened in the Senate with the split 2020. They just seemed more, they didn't seem to be getting along as well, and they seemed testy. I do think it'll be, depending on what happens with the budget, it will be remembered for the social legislation. But the reason I think on the social legislation is because there were so many partisan fights over it. So I think it really comes down to, you know, the partisan fighting going on.
Anita Kumar of The Washington Post and Shelian Davis of the Fredericksburg Freelance Star are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 if you have a question for our reporter panel. And we're looking at the semi-concluded, the regular session concluded, but the budget session. What else? They didn't finish judges.
Right.
So how many judges are yet to be elected? And are judges in the budget the only thing they will talk about when they come back?
Yes, I think that is the way they did their resolution. That's the only things they'll talk about when they get back. They haven't done judges because they don't know how many judges, because they don't know how much money they're going to put into judges. So they need to wait and settle that in the budget before they elect people for that number of positions.
Are judges particularly expensive?
You'd have to ask the judges, I guess. That would be a relative term. Within the scope of an $85 billion budget, not so much, no.
There was action on the last day that affected teachers and state employees across Virginia, at least future teachers and future state employees across Virginia, as the Virginia retirement system was refigured in terms of the way future pensions will not be pensions, but will be what?
They'll be a hybrid. They'll be partly pensions and partly like a 401k, although not exactly. I never can remember if that's the defined contribution or the defined benefit. But so it's going to be sort of a mix of both, like a basic, less rich pension system and then a 401k component to that. And they'll all have to contribute and pay their own employee share, which localities in the state had been doing for, 20, 30 years.
Anita, was that a very contentious reform of the VRS?
That was the thing that held them up that day. There were a couple contentious bills, and my understanding is that they were not going to pass one, and they weren't going to pass a bill on transportation, but the governor summoned some legislators to his office Saturday afternoon, and he wanted to deal. The pension reform was a big push for Governor McDonnell, and I did not think he wanted them to leave Saturday without doing something. He called it, in his remarks after session ended, he called it historic.
Anita Kumar and Shelian Davis are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call, 866-611-NEWS, 866-611-6397. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Alex from Lynchburg. Alex, welcome to Assembly Conversations.
Hi, thank you. I had a question. I'm a family support worker for Healthy Families America here in Lynchburg. And this year at the General Assembly, our budget was cut by 11% to give more cash to TANF recipients. My question was, what are your projections for future funding cuts for nonprofit programs like Healthy Families?
Which one of you might want to handle that first? Shelian, do you know what kind of cuts this type of program is facing?
I'm not clear on exactly what your program does.
Okay, but sure. We work with first-time parents who are at risk of abusing and neglecting their children, and we're home visitors to provide parent education to help prevent that risk of abuse and neglect in the home.
I think some of that funding is still up in the air. The governor had cut some health care, health safety net programs, and the House and Senate both want to put some back. But I think they have different numbers right now, and that's one of the things they'll be negotiating on.
So there's no hard and fast cut yet. It's just something that is to be settled when the budget gets settled, whenever that is, between now and June 30th. Have you got another question for our reporter panel?
Sure. What are your projections for the future of programs like this?
I really can't project what they're going to do with that sort of thing in the future. I mean, it varies from I guess, biennium, you know, two-year budget to two-year budget. It always depends on who's in charge and what kind of money they're looking at. So I wouldn't be able to make a very good projection at all. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for your call. Thank you very much. Anita, looking at the VRS, did they patch the holes that needed to be patched in that system? Did they find enough money to satisfy the governor that they were doing what he set out in his State of the Commonwealth?
I think there's two things going on with VRS. The thing that they passed Saturday was how employees, state employees, some local employees, teachers, and I think constitutional officers will contribute to their own pensions into the system. But the real question now that remains is how much money is going to go in.
So that part is not answered yet.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest pieces of the budget. If you'll recall, the governor wanted $2 billion put into VRS, with a good chunk of that, maybe even half, being from the localities. So that's a big question mark still remaining on the budget. The localities are looking at that, but they're also looking at how much aid they'll get from the state to help pay for that, and all that's still up in the air.
Because both houses put some money into their budgets in very different ways to help localities with that cost, which was, I think, better than half, so more than $1 billion. But as Anita says, that's something that will be dealt with in the budget, and it hasn't been settled yet.
The 130-some localities around Virginia, cities and counties, are dealing with their own budgets, of course, between now and the end of the spring. And they have to have some kind of indication from the state what they're going to be getting for schools, what they're going to be getting for law enforcement and other social services that are shared by the state and the localities. If you were a city councilor in Lynchburg, where you used to report, Chillian, what would you be asking your state legislator right now?
Well, I guess I would be asking him how quickly they can get this done, and then I would be asking, well, what do you think we would get? Localities have faced this several times in the past. I think we've had three long-lasting budget impasses in the past 12 years or so since I've been covering this, and some shorter ones. And I think in the worst-case scenario, they'll look at what they were projected to get, or they'll look at what they got the year past and plan, you know, that sort of money. But it's not ideal. They would like hard numbers. They would like to know what exactly they're getting so they can go ahead and get their budgets done.
Are counties and cities making any noise down here, Anita?
I've been hearing a lot from the Virginia Association of Counties. Had a press conference last week, I think, and they've sent some letters, and some of the localities are sending letters. But it's interesting that each locality is sort of doing things a little bit different. I'm actually reporting on a story right now about how localities are handling the lack of a state budget. And some have gone ahead and said, okay, well, we think it's going to be this much money, and we're just going to go ahead with our budget and adjust later if it's not. But some are just waiting. You know, they've pushed off everything, and they'll just wait until, you know, closer to the time. But there's a lot of problems because they have to decide their own tax rates. They have to have public hearings. They have to do their own budget. And so it's creating quite a problem.
And it also impacts different localities in different ways because some depend much less heavily on the state, especially when it comes to funding schools.
Right.
Anita Kumar and Chillian Davis are my guests on Assembly Conversations. If you have a question for our reporter panel, give us a call, 866-611-6397. Let's go back to the phones, where our next caller is Robert, and Robert is from Stanton, or near Stanton. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you. I don't know whether my facts are accurate or not, but I understand that our teachers generally across the country represent the lowest 10% of students, graduating students, in terms of their IQs and other performance tests and so forth.
That doesn't sound right.
Pardon?
That does not ring true with what I remember as a reporter for 32 years. So.
Well, as a teacher of 50 years and a college professor of many years, I can tell you that figure rings true repeatedly. And, you know, you can check that. And it recently has been reported that in Finland, that they take the top 10% to do their teaching. And, of course,
you're saying that the people who end up teaching in Virginia schools are in the bottom 10%?
My locus is California, so I assume that's generally nationwide. California really has pretty high standards.
I had not heard that. I don't know if either of our reporter panel would like to comment on that.
I think he had a question for the question.
Yeah, please continue.
And I'm wondering, I'm happy to hear that you've got things happening with teacher retirement, because I know that on retirement, I'm barely getting by as teacher retirement. But what I wanted to say was that I started a school over 40 years ago in California, which is still running. I've been back and checked, and I've talked to some of these students who are now in their 50s, and it's remarkable what distinctively different people they are. And our program, you taught yourself. You had mentors around, but you taught yourself. And these people are teaching themselves into their 50s now and have really creative activities that they're involved in. And I'm really kind of, and that school still exists and it's still running much as I did. And all it required was a mentor and a couple of community people. And kids who didn't want to come to school came to that school.
Well, it sounds like an interesting program. I don't know if we have anything quite like that in Virginia. Have you got a question for our reporters about any of the legislation that the state is considering this year?
Well, I'm just wondering what they're going to do to get to it. The other figure is that the average teacher stays in the classroom for 3.5 years and then bows out.
Well, there is some truth to that.
Yeah.
It's teacher retention is a problem.
Right.
Thank you very much for your call and your question. Anita, teacher retention has always had, especially in school districts where the pay is not as high as the national average, and of course Virginia has been struggling to reach the national average in teacher pay, has not been strong. Is that an issue that's come up during the session, and if so, how is Virginia looking at K through 12 teacher retention and public teacher funding?
Well, I think that's an issue that comes up every year, as you indicated, and I think that the Virginia Education Association of Public School Teachers would tell you it's not all, but a lot of it has to do with salary, as you just mentioned. And they, I forget what the statistic was, but the VEA was out touting, you know, how many years it had been since school teachers had gotten pay raises. You know, obviously, even when the state or the General Assembly talks about state employees getting raises, these are local teachers, local employees, so that's not necessarily a part of the raises that might be coming. And so, yeah, I think that's talked about every year, but I'm not sure that there's any solution.
That also came up particularly this year with a bill about teacher contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The governor had a big push to end the practice of continuing contracts, which most teachers in Virginia have, and replace those with three-year contracts, and after 3 years you could be let go without the principal or the administration really needing a reason. And teachers were very much against it, although there were some other educators groups that were for it, like the School Board Association. And the argument that the VEA was making was that that would make a profession that's already not that attractive in many ways due to benefits and salary even less attractive because there would be less job security.
So that was killed in the last week of the Assembly.
That was killed in the last week in the Senate, wasn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah. Senate, twice, actually. They killed it twice. And again, that was one of the governor's big pushes. That was one of his bills, and he really lobbied personally to get it, but they just didn't have the votes for it.
Let's look at transportation. Transportation has been a perennial issue in the General Assembly. It has led to budget deadlocks in the past. The Senate passed, that General Assembly passed a transportation bill on the last day, but it had, I think, no money in it except for renaming bridges that people might want to buy sponsorships.
And, yeah, VDOT can sell the naming rights to the infrastructure.
Yeah, they're saying, this administration is saying that could produce $5 to $20 million a year.
Who's gonna buy a bridge and where?
You could buy one.
I don't have $5 million. I don't have $5 million to buy a bridge.
Highway. Well, I guess they think that corporations might buy them, you know, sort of like stadiums.
The Wawa Bridge.
The Wawa Bridge. Fredericksburg could use a Wawa Bridge. Is there any talk about anything other than tolls funding transportation?
Well, the Senate had proposed a lot more money had been proposed. The governor wanted to do various things, including using part of the sales tax revenue for transportation. And the House was fine with that, but the Senate didn't want that. And that's Republicans and Democrats, or many Republicans, not all of them. They wanted to index the gas tax to inflation so that would go up because it hasn't been raised since, what, like
1986?
Okay. Maybe Bob was here during then. And the idea of raising the gas tax is a fight we have every time we have a fight about transportation. In the end, the House wouldn't go for that. The Senate wouldn't go for the sales tax, and that's why there's no money in the transportation bill.
Shelley Ann Davis and Anita Kumar are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call, 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. Anita, what's different about the leadership this year? We have a 2020 Senate. We have a House that is two-thirds Republican in nature, and Speaker Bill Howell is in charge there, but has such a large majority that sometimes you wonder if he can keep it on the same page.
Right, that's true. Although I have heard the Democrats in the House say, you know, we oppose every bill. We can't argue about all of them. You can't get up and speak on all of them. And, they know they're going to lose.
There is a new leader for the Democrats in the House, David Toscano, who is somewhat of a moderate, would you say?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think they think he's doing a good job. But, you know, when you're outnumbered 2-1, it's difficult. I would say the thing that people didn't really maybe realize as much before the session started was, even though the Republicans took the Senate and they have control because the lieutenant governor presides over the Senate and he's a Republican, there's still some moderates over there. Tommy Norman, who's the majority leader, and some other Republicans are moderates. I mean, when you look at who killed a lot of these bills in the Senate, it wasn't that the Democrats had sway. Not everything. I mean, obviously they have sway on the budget. But some of these other things, we did a little checking on this. I mean, it's basically four moderate Republicans
who voted with the Democrats to stop some of the legislation that the House had passed.
Yeah. And it wasn't just social. I mean, this teacher tenure bill that we just talked about, that was killed by a couple moderate Republicans. But some of the social legislation, you know, drug testing for welfare recipients, you name it.
That died in the House.
I think it died in the Senate, too. Oh, maybe that's not the one. But there are many of them that died at the hands of four Republican moderates.
You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We'll be right back after this short break. Thank you.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Assembly Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org.
This is Virginia Public Radio.